Radio Network. I'm your host, Vanessa Fewings, author of The Enthrall Sessions, The Icon Trilogy from Harlequin, and Perfume Girl, my new contemporary romance novel that was just released. Thank you to all of you who reached out to me and told me how much you've enjoyed the novel. It means the world to me. This week, I'm thrilled to say, we have New York Times and Publishers Weekly best-selling author Laurie Foster. She's known for the Summer Resort series, the Body Armor series, the Guthrie's Brothers series, the Road to Love series, with the latest book in that series, Driven to Distraction, that just came out. She actually has quite a few series, and it would actually take us till next week to mention them all, because she is one of the most prolific authors around. She has a loyal fan base who devour everything she writes. She also gives back in profound ways, and we talk more about that in the podcast. One of Laurie's claims to fame is her name was a clue in the New York Times crossword puzzle. She also has this wonderful quote that I'm going to ask her about. And it goes like this. People have often called romance an escape, but I think it's more of an affirmation. In romance novels, people have problems. They overcome them and they end up happy. Isn't that what we all want in life? Welcome to the Romance Show, Laurie Foster.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy you could join us. I wanted to kick off, actually, with an amazing quote that you've said. It's really inspirational. And it's about romance. People have often called romance an escape, but I think it's more of an affirmation. In romance novels, people have problems. They overcome them and they end up happy. What we all want in life. I love that inspirational quote from you. Tell me where that comes from.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I've been reading for a really, really long time. I've met tons of readers. I've met tons of authors. I haven't met an unkind or person that, I'm sorry, my phone is ringing and my husband's not answering it. A person that hasn't been helpful. It's just the romance industry is full of people who love animals, love people, love reading. Sorry, I'm just going to leave that off the hook.
I think I even need to get that, and you are allowed.
It's my son, and he apparently doesn't know that I'm on here, and I don't know where my husband is and why he didn't answer the phone.
Usually my dog is snorting and being grumpy in the background, so it's like we have... And then one time I was interviewing an author and there was it was the girls over from Book and Main, that amazing website, that social website for book lovers. And we had lightning coming in during the podcast. It was really cool. We had great sound effects.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Well, I have four cats, so often they're trying to help me, but I thought ahead and closed my office door so they couldn't try to take part today.
Oh, that's so cute. I did see that you dedicate a book, is it each year, to rescue?
Yes.
I'm really proud to say that my husband and I, went to a shelter and we saw this little, it was mid-sized hound dog, we've called him Sherlock, and we rescued this hound dog called Sherlock, and he's rescued us right back.
Oh, I yes.
What you do. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with the charity for rescuing animals.
Well, so every year I write a novella, which is a shorter book, and I do it through a special contract with my publisher. Now, I've done it with Kensington and Berkeley, and now I'm at Harlequin, and Harlequin has done this for me, where they write a special contract where the advance for the book and all of the royalties for the life of the book go directly to the shelter. And so I never actually see the money. Once I turn the book in and I'm all done with it, I sell the book, but I don't actually ever see even the royalty statements off of it. It all goes to the shelter. Now, they often write me and thank me when they get paid. And so for the life of the book, they'll continue to get that money. And so far, all of my books are still living, meaning they're still in print, they're still producing, they're still earning income. So it's a unique way that I can help, unique to me being an author. And I just feel like everyone should do what they're capable of doing. Not everyone can do the same thing. my heart would break if I went up to walk the dogs and pet the cats, because I would end up, I've already got four and I'd end up with 50. And so that's something that I can do. I can donate. People that don't have my ability with, you know, having a special contract can go up and walk the animals or donate food or, you know, just do whatever they can to help take care of the homeless animals.
That's just so,
there's so many.
And then you've actually posted those specific books too on your website, haven't you? So those books, if you want to go out and find one of those books and read one of those books, knowing that the funds are going to rescue animals, then that's a fabulous, fabulous thing to do. So what was the latest title of the book you wrote for one of them?
The last one was, I think it was Tucker. And it was part of my Buckhorn series. So it's a long-standing series that I have set in Kentucky and in a fictional place in Kentucky. And so that's the last few benefit books have been related to that series. Since it was popular, probably one of my better-selling series, I thought that would be a good tie-in to ensure that the shelter got a respectable amount of royalties off each book.
That's just fabulous.
And those are all listed on my website under benefit books.
Benefit books, great. I have to tell you, whenever I go into a Barnes & Noble or to a grocery store, your book covers pop. Like, I'm always like, wow, it's a Laura Foster book. Do you have any influence on those book covers?
I do, luckily, yes. So that was one of the first things I tried to negotiate. You know, you start out selling a book, then you want a multi-book contract, and then you want to hit a bestsellers list. And, you know, so you keep changing your goals as you go along. And one of my goals was to have some cover input, or at least, you know, some sort of form of cover approval. I'm real finicky about the covers because I don't write hairless men, and yet they often put men on covers with waxed chests or shaved chests, and my men are doing things other than grooming their chests.
Yes.
So I'm always saying, please, if they don't have any chest hair, just put a shirt on them. If they do have chest hair, take that shirt off. And so, you know, I've been able to work with them that way. Or if, you know, you see a cover that doesn't look quite right, and you can give a little bit of input. You know, that's not my forte. So I write the books. I'm not a cover artist, and they have an entire art department who knows what does well, what doesn't do well, you know, what Walmart will accept, what Amazon likes. And so I try to leave that up to them. Then I do give them a little bit of input on, you know, things that matter as far as the character and how he looks and what he should be doing.
Oh, that's really fabulous. I mean, I've written a series for Harley Quinn called the Icon Trilogy, and they very much included me in the designs of the covers. I was felt very lucky. It's fabulous,
yes.
Isn't it? Harlequin, have you ever been to one of their Christmas parties?
Harlequin's Christmas parties?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Or at least I don't recall.
It's not Christmas. I take that back. It's, they have the Romance Writers Association. So it's in July. So I don't even know why I thought Christmas. It's obviously Christmas.
Oh, okay. Yes, I have been to those. Yes.
Oh, yeah. When they have the desserts out, they have like the most, Harlequin is famous for their parties. My editor told me
that
I started writing for them. And I actually experienced one of those for myself. But it's lovely writing for Harlequin, isn't it? They're a great team.
They are, yes. I'm very, very happy there. I started there a gazillion years ago. I'm 60 now, so it was a really long time ago that I started there writing category romance. And then I left and I wrote for a very long, happy time with Kensington and a very long, happy time with Berkeley. And it's like I've come full circle because now I'm back at Harlequin. And, you know, I feel like I started there and now I'm back there, and a lot of different people, but I really, really like. I like everything. I like their distribution. I like their cover art. I like the form of editing. So it's a good fit for me.
Yes. And they're a great team. They're a great all around amazing team. I want to take you back a few years. Bearing in mind you've written over 100 novels, which is just mind boggling to me. That's just incredible. Do you remember that first moment where you're reading these romance novels and then you go, I think I can do this? Do you remember what that novel was that's triggered that, or what that moment was like for you?
You know, it's so funny. I remember parts of the book, but I don't remember the author or the title. So I had gotten sick and I was in bed and I just felt lousy. I'm not a good downtime person. I'm you know, fairly frantic and always doing things and pretty busy. And my sister, taking pity on me, brought me over a bag of romance novels, which I had never read a romance novel. But since I couldn't get out of bed, I'd had a minor surgery and I just was really feeling lousy. And I started reading the first one, sort of jumped through in the middle and found a love scene, you know, something that would interest me. But then I was so intrigued by the book, I had to go back to see how these people had gotten to where they were. And I read the whole thing and, you know, it was very much a damsel in distress and a duke. You know, it was just absolutely, that's my favorite thing to read is historicals. And it was absolutely wonderful. And I can't say that I thought I can do this. What I thought was, this didn't go quite the way I wanted it to, so I'm going to write one that goes the way I want it to, with never ever with the intent of selling it. You know, I just basically did it for my own amusement. And I found a local writers conference. And when I went, I think by the time I went to this conference, strictly as a reader, you know, as a fan of other authors, I had probably completed 3 books. Longhorn and longhand and pencil, you know, on ruled paper. And there were a bunch of people there who for 3 years had been working on one book. And that's when I thought, well, shoot, I'm finishing books. So if I'm finishing books, maybe I do know what I'm doing. Yes. So that was my wake up call.
That's brilliant. I mean, the fact that we can finish them and take them all the way to the end, I think that's, you know, how do you do that? Are you plotting them? Are you a pantser? How does that work for you to make sure you get through to the end of a novel? Or does it just feel very organic for you? It's a bit of both.
It's very organic. I don't plot. I'm one of those people that if I plot, I feel like it's already been done. So I come up, generally, I liked writing them in. So generally it'll be a male character that is the first kernel of an idea in my head. And he sort of, in a very visual way, shows me a situation that he's in, you know, good, bad, romantic, not romantic, dangerous. You know, it's just some form of a kernel of an idea that he'll show me. And then I have to come up with something to tell my editor what the book will be about. But it's usually nowhere near what I try to tell her. And then when I start writing, I just pretty much let the characters talk to me and tell me what they're doing. And that way I get to be as surprised as the reader when she's reading. So I kind of make it up as I go along, and it's almost like reading a book, just not as quick.
I love it. I love the comparison. It's like driving a car in the night. You can just see just ahead of you, but you don't know beyond that, but you just trust it. That's what it is.
Yes, very true. Very true.
I absolutely love that.
That's a good analogy.
Yes. And so your books are well known for having a lot of heart, a lot of humor, and obviously the gorgeous, sexy alphas, but also the strong women. Is that something you consciously set out to do, or is it just something that feels like that's just a good fit for you in your work?
Well, you know, I think we write what we like to read, and I don't like, I don't want this to be derogatory in any way, but I'm not a very frou-frou woman. You know, I'm not very, it takes a rare occasion to get me in a dress, and heels just don't work with me, and I don't wear a lot of makeup. And so I can write those women sometimes, but I don't feel like I do them justice because I'm not that sort of a feminine woman. I'm just more down-to-earth person. So I like being around other down-to-earth people. Now, I think people often, you know, misunderstand vulnerable with weak, because I pretty much think everyone, man and woman, has vulnerable times in their lives, and that's the story we tell. So we tell about these strong people who are going through a difficult time emotionally, physically, with their family, with danger, with life, and they meet another person who helps them get through it. So that's what I like to write. I like to write that romantic element where two people get together and life is better because of it. So they still have to solve their problems. They still have to work through the issues, but it's easier with someone who's got your back and is supportive and cares about you. So I think writing the strong women, they can cry, they can have a problem, they can get mad, they can lose their temper, they can be a little witchy on occasion, because that's all just being human.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't expect men to be perfect because they're also human. So they can err, they can say the wrong thing, they can think they're doing the right thing and it turns out to be the wrong thing. And, you know, to me, I just like to see them work through all those dynamics and get it on the right path.
Yeah, you're bringing a lot of wisdom to your books. That happens.
I don't feel very wise.
Well, I think
I don't feel very wise, but
I feel like the fact that they're reflecting normal life, but and characters going through situations and overcoming them. You know, that's very inspirational. So.
Well, I don't know anyone who hasn't been through some stuff and who isn't going to go through some stuff, you know. And my husband and I have been together over 40 years, and I know being with someone who really, really knows me and who I'm just extremely close with makes everything easier. There's no problem that I carry alone because I carry it with him, and yeah. He helps. So, you know, to me, that's what I try to bring over into my books, whether she's helping him or he's helping her.
Yeah, and I think that's what's wonderful about these long-term relationships. I've been married a while to my husband, but it's those moments where you just know you have each other's back, that you'll be completely honest. Like, I ask him a lot of advice when I'm doing something, particularly in publishing, and I go, what do you think? And I run it by him. And so, you know, even book covers, I ask his advice, believe it or not, because I'm like, and he always gives me the best advice. I always feel comfortable with him saying those things.
Oh, good. Perfect.
Why do you think, and this is nothing to do with my husband, so it's a bad segue, but Broken Winged Heroes, why are they so compelling to us, do you think?
Well, I think it's the broken wing hero. So if he's the type of person who was a good person, who you know, was an upstanding person, was a caring person, and then something terrible happened and he's bitter because of it and he's making bad decisions because of that. I think most people like to try to help other people. I think intrinsically we're all the same. I think deep down we all want to help each other. It's just our ideas of how to help someone that differs. So, you know, there's always a lot of controversy and what's the right way to do something, what's the wrong way to do something. I think everyone wants the right outcome. They just differ in how to go about it. So that's one of the things you can bring into a book, is showing people trying to help and it turns out to not be help. You know, it's the opposite of help, even though their intentions were good. And then because we're all individual, you know, you can write a book that to the author feels like you really showed something, and a reader who's bringing their own perspectives to it can love it or they can really not love it because of their own experiences and perspectives. So, you know, I think you do the best you can do. The broken wing heroes, they're just so vulnerable, still strong, still very masculine, but there's a vulnerability about them that we want to try and fix.
Yeah.
I don't like to write the jerks. I mean, they can have a jerky moment, but I don't really want to write an outright jerk. If they're being a jerk, I want them to be being a jerk for a really good reason. You know, he's trying to keep the woman alive, or he's killing the bad guy, so he's going to be a jerk, you know. But
well, it's a burst of something, but I feel the same way. I think what's really sexy is when they have self-control and they're masterful. To me, that's actually sexier.
Yeah, I like it too.
I remember when this narrator, I won't say his name, he was in an interview and he said he was narrating this book and the guy in the book kept punching trees. And he said he kept going, why am I punching trees? You know, the guy being very self-contained and showing no act of aggression, you know, and being very sophisticated, yeah, or being very earthy, you know. I love that. So that was kind of funny.
Punching trees would lead to some broken knuckles, I'm sure, you know.
I know.
Well, in the romance community, you're really well known for interviewing. You're the one, actually, we've turned the tables today on you today, but you're the one that's usually interviewing, and you interview authors in your RV, your amazing RV. Tell me how that came about.
Well, that was one of my husband's brainstorm ideas. He comes to me and he says, you do these fun interviews. Let's call them RV interviews. And we'll take the RV to our annual event. And you can sit out there. And I said, that's corny. I don't want to do that. And he's like, no, it'll be really cool. And he was right. It is a lot of fun. It's fun to get the authors out there. You sit down in the RV, which actually the seat that I sit in when I'm interviewing is the same seat I sit in to write if we're on a very long road trip. And so it's a comfortable spot for me. There's a little stool I've got underneath to prop my legs up. I don't know about you, but I never sit with proper posture while writing. You know, I'm all over the place.
Me too.
So go ahead.
So I was just going to say, I lean back. Yeah.
Yes, me too. Feet up, lean back, arms stretched out. Yeah, it's terrible posture. So we take the RV there to the annual event each year, and we have different wonderful authors. 2019, Christine Feehan will be there, and Nancy Nagel, and I can't even think of all the authors right now, and I hope to get those RV interviews in also. Nice. And I try to do the interviews as a very, not really so much about the books, but about life, sort of an inside look at the author. Because I know people probably have misconceptions about me as an author. Well, maybe not, because I'm all over the internet and people see me a lot. But, we used to have these visions of these elegant authors and very educated. And we were just recently at a conference, and I had to ask the gal next to me, which one of these forks am I supposed to be using right now? Because I don't do big fancy dinners.
Yeah. Well, I was in the Army, British Army. I was a captain in the British Army many, many years ago. And they taught us how to eat from the outside in. Otherwise, I wouldn't know either.
And that's what she told me, outside in.
But otherwise, I'm like you, though. I mean, in as much as I love going around in my sweats, and I'm not big into handbags or shoes. Like, I'm not really a tomboy, but I prefer to write than shop for stuff. You know, I'm very lucky like that. I think I'm lucky like that. Maybe not.
I think I'm lucky like that as well. Yes.
So you basically organize this event, don't you? Is it once a year?
Yes.
What's it called?
Yes. Every year. It's called the Reader Writer Get Together, and we shorten it to RAGT, Reader Author Get Together. I'm sorry, Reader Author Get Together, and we shorten it to RAGT, and then we add the year. So we just completed RAGT 18 in June, and we'll be doing RAGT 19 in June. So every year, right around June, usually the beginning of June, we have this event. It's 500 people. I try to limit how many authors, because I really want there to be 60 or so authors and the rest readers, so that the authors who are there have a really nice audience, and they sell just tons of books. And the readers get to visit with those 60 different authors. It's like a giant tea party with a few parties thrown in. So we have a Thursday night party, then we have a Friday breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then a Friday party, and then a Saturday breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a Saturday party. And for readers, it's $75 is all, plus whatever they spend on their hotel room. And for authors, it's $125. Most of the authors attending sponsor something. So when the readers come down to breakfast, they get extra books and swag and different fun things because the authors have sponsored it. Same thing with the parties. And we have a few boardrooms. They do breakout workshops and stuff in the boardrooms. And we have a giant raffle we do each year. Last year, I don't remember exactly. It was maybe $28,000 we donated to the animal shelter off of our raffles. So nobody makes any money. We take whatever's made at the event on the raffles, and we donate that to a charity.
That's just fabulous. How do, if readers want to attend that, how do they sign up to get into that?
Well, we have a Reader Author Get Together Facebook page.
Right.
We also have readerauthorgettogether.com website, which will be updated in January. All the information on there is still for 2018, and we will update that in January with the new authors and who's sponsoring what. And registration for readers happens in March. Those 500 spots literally go in 10 minutes. So any reader that wants to attend needs to really know what she's doing and be ready to go. It happens very quickly.
Yeah. So you heard it here, guys. You've got to get your click finger ready if you want to go to that.
Yes.
It sounds like, I mean, I know that you support a lot of authors. You're always interviewing amazing authors. And I love the interviews because they're so relaxed and you just see the author relaxed and able to be themselves, their authentic self. So what advice would you give to new authors starting out?
Well, you know, this is the same advice I've been giving for years upon years, because it's something that I see authors do that I think holds them back. Now, there's always an exception to the rule, of course, but I feel like a lot of authors try to write by committee, meaning they write some and they share it with their critique group, and then their critique group tells them what does or doesn't work. They revise that, they go and write again. Honest to God, you need to sit down and write your own book, your own way, start to finish, because a lot of times you'll tweak something yourself. You'll discover on your own, in your own voice, what needs to be done and when it needs to be done and where it needs to be done and which character needs to be making the change. And there's so many books out there right now, so many books, and the entire landscaping of publishing has changed. And the only thing any author has to offer that is unique or different is voice. And if you take your voice and you're getting it polished by four different people, even one other person, then you don't have a unique voice anymore. You have a voice by committee. That said, if you send your book to an editor and an editor requests revisions, that editor can buy that book by all means. Then you revise it, you know, but not for someone who can't buy your book. Make that book as much you as you can possibly make it, because that's the only unique thing you have to offer. There is no untold story. There is no untold character. You know, there's no untold joke, no uncovered love scene. It's all been done. It's just how you do it that might make it different.
I love that. I mean, I completely agree. And I feel like, I know a lot of authors have, teams that sometimes give them feedback. I don't do that personally. I've never done that because I trust the process, and I trust my characters, and I trust the story, and I've read enough books and written enough books, I feel, like kind of know, you know, what's going to work and what won't work. And when I do a rewrite, I go, oh my gosh, she's coming across so wrong. So I critique myself.
Right.
Not to say I'm always right, but I feel like I trust the process and I trust the characters, and I know what I like and what I would like in the book. And you have to write the book that you would want to read, right? I think that's, yeah.
Yes, I think so. Yes, very much so. And, you know, what you want to read isn't what everyone else is going to read. So authors also need to understand that nobody gets to skate by without a bad review now and then. It happens to everyone. We all get those bad reviews. Yeah. I know some authors won't look at them. They don't really bother me that much. So yeah. You know, I don't like getting them, but they're just part of the job. Like I say, people have different experiences. I have to say I've lived a fairly charmed life. You know, I have three healthy sons, four healthy grandkids, been with my husband a long time. I've never been homeless. I've never had any, you know, really tragic illnesses. So my experiences are going to be different from someone who's really struggled. I've been talking recently with a woman whose daughter is in long-term hospital care because the daughter is not well and the prognosis is not good. Her perspective is certainly going to be different on life than mine is. Yeah. And I'm very compassionate. I care so much. But, you know, until you've lived it, you can't know how you would feel about it. So something that could trigger her in a book is going to be something that I would gloss right over. And I know that. So I know if I write a character that hits a bad spot for somebody, they're allowed those feelings. They're allowed to be upset. They're allowed to not like my book. They're allowed to say it was trash. You know, that's all part of it. I just respect every reader. I think they're all smart. They're all reading, so they're all smart. I don't try to tell them anything about politics. I don't try to tell them anything about what I do each day is I try and ask people to try and be kind to each other. That's my good morning post, is let's all try to be kind to each other. And that's it. That's as much advice as I'm willing to give anyone.
We really do need that. I mean, how do you manage? You're amazing at social media and connecting with the readers. How do you balance that with writing?
Well, I'm sort of a frantic writer, so I write quickly, write a lot. And I don't believe in writer's block, so when I start to feel like I've lost my spot, I go chat a little bit on social media and say a few things there, and you know, it helps clear my brain a little bit. Before my two little doggies passed away, I would get up and go do something with them. You know, they've been gone a little while now. We have four cats, and so if I get online and I talk to readers for a few minutes, or I share a few posts, or I even just complain for a moment, then I can come back to the book and I think, oh, I know what I'm going to do here. And I think it's very harmful to sit and stare at a blank screen and not know what you're doing. Do something else. Get your blood flowing and do something else, and it'll come to you.
That's true. That's really, I think Agatha Christie said she would sometimes get her ideas when she was doing the dishes.
Who said that?
I think
Agatha Christie.
I think so, yeah. It was probably something else.
I had an editor who would write me in the middle of the night with book titles while she was taking her shower. It would come to her, and she said, I'm always showering at midnight, and that's when I get the best ideas. And she, I'd get up in the morning and here'd be an email from her saying, how about this? I think this will work. So yeah, I think you have to get up and move, get your blood pumping. And you know, something else that drives me nuts a little bit, I'm not going to say that writing is easy, because you're a writer, you know, it's not easy, but good gracious, it's certainly easier than a lot of jobs people are doing. And I think sometimes authors try to validate themselves by talking like they're working in the coal mines, you know. And the fact is, if we hit a spot that's not working, we can get up. I mean, I was just eating sugar babies a minute ago. I can get up and go eat sugar babies. So this is a pretty easy gig when you can get up and go eat sugar babies when it's not going the way you want it to.
I feel the same way. I was a registered nurse for like most of my life. And I have a
hard
day. It's not flowing, whatever. I go, hello. You know, you were in the middle of a night shift, you know, when you were running off your feet and you were trying to give the best of yourself. And sometimes a little bit stressed because you were concerned for somebody or a patient or a family member. And, you know, so after that, everything is amazing. Everything is easy for me, I think. The moment I reset that baseline, you know.
You put it in perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes we work. I mean, sometimes I start at 4 a.m. and I work until 8 o'clock at night. If I'm trying, if there's enough scenes there and I'm trying to get them done. So, you know, I'm never going to say it's super, super easy. It takes dedication. It takes motivation. But I've done other jobs, and this by far is a piece of cake compared to some of the other jobs I've done, you know, before I published and whatnot. So, you know, I think people really need to celebrate how blasted lucky we are that we get to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's just what a blessing this is to be able to do this and to get to connect with so many wonderful readers. I have the best readers. They are all so much fun. They crack me up on a daily basis. Sometimes they break my heart because I know they're going through awful things. And, you know, it's just, I can't imagine a career I would enjoy more than this one.
Yeah, I feel incredibly grateful, incredibly blessed.
By the way, you remind me of my sister-in-law, because she also served in the military and now she's a nurse. So she didn't turn into an author, but huge respect for you, because those are both career choices that I just have massive, massive respect. So my hat's off to you.
I feel that about, you know, people like you. You know, with all you're doing in the romance community, you're bringing all this, you know, this goodness and this, it is escape to all our beloved readers. So, and you're so prolific. How many books do you write a year? I'm scared to ask.
Well, yeah, it's not as bad as you would think. I've just, like I said, I'm 60, so I've been writing for a long time. So I do two mass markets each year, one trade, and one novella.
That's a lot.
So I do the two mass markets, the trade, and then the novella is my benefit book. So that's what I write each year.
That's amazing. I do about three. I think I'm.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, but yours is more. What's your latest novel? Tell me about your latest novel.
Well, just recently,
yes,
out the 20th of this month is Driven to Distraction, and it's the first in a new series for me, the Road to Love series. And he is a courier, so he does where he drives the heroine who works for a wealthy man. He drives her to do pickups for things that the wealthy man has acquired. Because sometimes when you're buying certain things, you don't want them going through the mail. So you need someone to go pick them up to ensure the safety and that you get them in one piece. And, you know, the all respect to the post office, but things get banged up in there and misplaced sometimes. So, and he's very much a big hunky alpha guy, but he's also a sweetheart. You know, he's got a brother he loves dearly, loves his mother to death. He's got some issues with his dad, and his dad plays into all the books. I finished the second one, which is Slow Ride, which is, this is Brody. Driven to Distraction is Brody, and then Slow Ride is his brother Jack. And then when I finish the book I'm working on now, I'll write a third book that goes in that series.
Right. That's just fabulous. So, and you can get them anywhere if you go into, isn't that right? Barnes & Noble, your local grocery store, obviously Amazon, you can get it on Kindle, everywhere.
Yeah, just about everywhere. iTunes, you know, they're all of the links are always on my website. So I have an amazing web team with Wax Creative, and they make sure that all the links for all the places you can order it are online.
Thank you. I usually at this stage, I ask the author to give a message to her readers, and you've already kind of expressed, you know, how beloved they are to you. But do you have anything to add to your reader that you'd like to say at the end of the podcast?
So many messages, right?
Yeah.
I've sent so many messages. you know, I do 3 giveaways a week as sort of my thank you to readers. So any readers that visit my Facebook page, I've got about a little over 100,000 people on my Facebook page. And I do giveaways. I do Friday through Monday, and a new one Monday through Wednesday, and then one Wednesday through Friday. So that's my thank you to readers. If they come and they hang out and they can enter those giveaways. And it's kind of a nice thing because I can also give props to other authors and hand some stuff over to readers. So, yeah. You know, a lot of times it's more than one book that I'm giving away. Today I did a live video this morning talking about a few of the books that I had recently read that I loved. And then I did a Christmassy giveaway. And so the winner for that will be chosen on Wednesday. Okay. So readers, come visit me on Facebook.
Yeah, go in and say hi and go win something.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Laurie Foster, on The Romance Show. I'm just so honored that you were able to take time out of your busy schedule to be with us. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it so very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you again to Laurie Foster for joining us on The Romance Show. And thank you to everyone who's gone out and bought Perfume Girl and have been enjoying it. It really does mean the world to me when you reach out and say hi. And thank you so much for all those incredible messages. Also, our other news is the Enthrall Sessions is now on Kindle Unlimited. So if you're a member of Amazon's KU, Kindle Unlimited, you can go over there and read it for free right now. A shout out to my producer, Pam Stack. Join us in the Romance Lounge. It's Vanessa Fewings Romance Lounge on Facebook, where you get to chat with me every day. I'm also on Instagram. And for more info on my writing and books, I'm on vanessafewings.com. Thank you again to Laurie Foster for joining us. And until next time, keep your books open and your hearts full.